We will prohibit indoor gatherings or events of any size in any location, public or private.
Life tightens once again as the pandemic intensifies. This is Thursday, November 19th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Remember, you can find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also coming your way, you'll soon be able to test yourself for coronavirus. Controversy over a presidential decision on U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Protests lead to some changes in Thailand. That and more on today's VOA Asia. Coronavirus cases in the United States now exceed 11.2 million, according to Johns Hopkins University, with 1 million of those cases recorded just in the past week. As VOA's Mariama Diallo reports, states and cities are implementing more restrictions to help fight a rising wave of new cases.
States and cities across America are ordering and imploring residents to stay home just ahead of the National Thanksgiving Day holiday next week. Chicago's mayor has asked residents to restrict gathering to 10 people or fewer. The new measure began on Monday and will last for at least a month. Chicago resident and retired Dr. Forrest Jones supports the move.
I don't think we have any choice, unfortunately. As long as the numbers of new infections and deaths are going up and the stress on our capacity to care for people who get sick from COVID, this is an emergency and we have to take emergency measures.
New restrictions in the city of Philadelphia will start on Friday and extend through the end of the year.
We will prohibit indoor gatherings or events of any size in any location, public or private. It means no indoor parties, group meals, football watching groups, no visiting between households, no indoor weddings, funerals, baby showers.
Washington Governor Jay Inslee warned his state is facing its most dangerous virus threat yet.
Now we're facing a third wave that is trending to be more dangerous than any we have seen before. Average daily cases in our state have doubled just in the last 2 weeks. It cannot go on like this.
Starting Tuesday, gyms and some entertainment centers in Washington state will be required to halt indoor services. And restaurants and bars will again be limited to outdoor dining and takeout services starting on Wednesday. Also Wednesday, Michigan will begin new restrictions for at least 3 weeks, including no in-person classes for high schools and colleges, no organized sports, and no indoor dining.
We are in the worst moment of this pandemic to date. The situation has never been more dire. We are at the precipice, and we need to take some action.
Some good news came on Monday in the form of a second promising COVID vaccine. Drug maker Moderna said preliminary results found its vaccine to be 94.5% effective, but company officials say there's still a lot of work ahead.
It's a really important milestone in the fight against the pandemic. Knowing the vaccine is going to be effective is great news, but we still need to complete the regulatory process, which involves completing the study and generating more data, even some follow-up and safety data. And then, of course, we need to get busy manufacturing.
1 week ago, drug maker Pfizer said a trial study found its vaccine to be 90% effective against COVID-19. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
An all-in-one at-home test for the coronavirus gets federal approval. Associated Press correspondent Mike Gracia has more.
A home test kit for COVID-19 has won emergency approval from the Food and Drug Administration. The 30-minute test from California manufacturer Lucira Health allows users to collect a nasal sample with a swab, swirl it in a vial, and plug it into a portable device that analyzes the sample and displays the result. A prescription is required for the test. The FDA has authorized nearly 300 tests for coronavirus, the vast majority of which must be performed by health professionals and processed at laboratories. Mike Gracia, Washington.
At the orders of President Donald Trump, the Pentagon Tuesday said it was bringing home more than 2,000 American service members from Iraq and Afghanistan in the coming weeks ahead of next year's U.S. presidential inauguration. International Edition's Lori London got an update from VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb.
By January the 15th, the U.S. is going to reduce its force presence in Afghanistan to 2,500 troops. It's at about 4,500 now. It's also going to be reducing its forces in Iraq to 2,500 troops by January 15th as well. That's according to Acting Secretary of Defense Chris Miller. He was talking to Pentagon reporters Tuesday. We went in the briefing room. We were hoping to ask him some questions, but he did not take any questions. He just made this statement. He told us that while this is a troop reduction, it did not equate to a change in U.S. policy or objectives in the global war against terrorism. And I will point out that National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien did lay out a similar plan to this reduction in October. And at the time, the Pentagon would not confirm or deny his plan that he had laid out. But now we see that this is happening.
Why is it significant? And is it significant?
So the significance in this is, number one, you do not normally see outgoing presidents making troop adjustments in the final days of their presidency. That is usually something that they try to keep consistent so the incoming president can make the decision on that. That's the number one issue. Another thing that's significant about this is the U.S. is not going to zero troops. That was something that had been a major concern for former military officials, current military officials, experts, because they worried that if the U.S. would go down to zero troops in Afghanistan, that we would not have completed our objectives being preventing another 9/11, not allowing al-Qaeda to have a safe haven there, and helping the Afghan government and the Taliban reach a peace agreement. And so now we know that that will not happen by the time that President Trump exits on January the 20th. Miller was able to speak, he said, with several key leaders to update them on the plans. But the interesting thing, he said, he spoke to them Tuesday, which was when the news came out. And so it appears that our allies and the members of Congress did not have a lot of notice on this change. He notified NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg and Afghan President Ashraf Ghani. And while a senior defense official told reporters on background that these cuts are not going to result in any elimination of capabilities on the ground, current U.S. military officials have told me on background that any significant reduction of forces like the one that's happening in Afghanistan is going to lead to at least some reduction of the scope of the U.S. missions. And that is if indeed all of the missions in Afghanistan continue. In fact, one official told me that the U.S. military is currently still working through the detailed planning to determine what effect exactly this reduction is going to have on particular capabilities, be they training and advising the Afghan forces or something like counterterrorism.
What impact could this have with ongoing negotiations with the Taliban in the upcoming Biden administration, and what reaction are you hearing?
We're not yet sure what the reaction will be, but we do know that people on Capitol Hill are thinking this is not a good move. In fact, Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger told VOA on Tuesday that any sort of drawdown like this is a mistake that would destroy any leverage that the U.S. could be using in peace negotiations designed to end the fighting between the Afghan government and the Taliban. In fact, he said, these negotiations are still ongoing. You always negotiate from a position of strength, implying that reducing by 2,000 forces roughly would not be from a position of strength at all. We also have heard from some of President Trump's biggest allies on Capitol Hill. Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, has said that the U.S. needs to continue to apply pressure until conditions for a long-term defeat of Islamic State and al-Qaeda have been achieved. He said, frankly, no American wants to continue this war in Afghanistan. They would like it to be conclusively won, but the facts on the ground are that, and I'm paraphrasing here, that a rapid withdrawal of U.S. forces from Afghanistan would hurt our allies and delight the people who wish us harm.
And why do you think this is happening now?
Well, President Trump abruptly fired Defense Secretary Mark Esper about a week ago, and he replaced him with Christopher Miller, the former director of the National Counterterrorism Center. And then after Miller was appointed, there were additional appointees at the Pentagon, one being retired Army Colonel Douglas McGregor, who's called frequently for a complete withdrawal of U.S. forces from Afghanistan and even the shutting down of the U.S. embassy in Kabul, and Anthony Tata, who is now performing the duties of Undersecretary of Policy. He has also called for a full withdrawal from Afghanistan. So I was talking to a former senior military official who basically said the conspiracy theorist in him would have to say that now we understand why the president purged the civilian leadership at the Pentagon, because he wanted to make a big change in Afghanistan, and it appears that Secretary Esper was not willing to do so. According to the Washington Post, he had sent a memo saying that any further withdrawal was not responsible at this time.
VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb speaking with the International Edition's Lori London. We are happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Thai protesters splashed paint, daubed graffiti, and sprayed water on the police headquarters in Bangkok Wednesday, a day after dozens were hurt by tear gas and water cannon in the worst violence in months of anti-government demonstrations. Youth-led protests since July have become the biggest challenge to the establishment in years, with their demands for the ousting of Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha, a new constitution, and reforms to curb the monarchy's powers. Tens of thousands joined Wednesday's protest, which turned the outside of the Royal Thai Police headquarters into a multicolored mess. Reuters' Gloria Tso has more on that.
Demonstrators in Thailand pushed past barricades outside parliament on Tuesday as police fired back with water cannons and tear gas in the worst violence the country has seen since its new youth-led protest movement began in July. Over 50 people have been hurt so far, some with gunshot wounds. But the police denied that they had opened fire with live ammunition or rubber bullets and said they were investigating who might have used firearms. Thousands of anti-government demonstrators met outside parliament calling for constitutional change, curbing the powers of King Maha Vajiralongkorn and the removal of Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha. Lawmakers inside were discussing several proposals for constitutional changes, most of which left the king's powers untouched. Protesters advanced on police with makeshift shields, including inflatable pool ducks. Some scuffled with dozens of yellow-shirted royal supporters who had staged an earlier demonstration calling on lawmakers not to make changes to the constitution. After about 6 hours, police pulled back and abandoned their water trucks, which protesters then mounted and sprayed with graffiti. The latest protests have emerged as the biggest challenge to the country's establishment in years. Demonstrators say the Thai monarchy has helped enable decades of military domination in the country.
That was Reuters' Gloria Tso reporting. This is VOA Asia. As the deadly coronavirus continues to rage across the U.S. and around the world, people are turning to COVID-19-related apps to figure out their day-to-day risks. VOA's Julie Tappo has more.
Two college students from Carnegie Mellon University in Pennsylvania have developed an interactive app that displays with one click real-time data of COVID-19 cases and deaths in each country around the world.
Basically, go on the website, you'll see a globe of the entire world, and you can click on any country in the world, and you'll get the most recent active cases, the number of deaths, and the number of recoveries in that country.
They say their COVID visualizer is the first app to present up-to-the-minute COVID-19 data in a three-dimensional format.
There are others that do sort of this 2D map, but we believe that it's sort of more intuitive to be able to see everything in sort of three dimensions and be able to relate things much easier.
Physicians Liz Goldberg and Megan Rainey from Brown University in Rhode Island have developed an app as well. My COVID Risk was designed to help people assess their risk of getting the virus in specific situations and events.
The idea of this app is that before you go to the event, you can put in all the things you know that you might encounter, such as how many people are there, whether masks will be worn, how big the space is, and what type of activities you'll be doing. And then you get an idea of what your risk would be in contracting COVID if you decide to attend that event.
The doctors say they wanted to help people calculate the risks of doing the things they want to do in their lives.
As emergency physicians, Dr. Goldberg and I were constantly being asked by friends and family, is this safe to do? Is this safe to do? And we try to provide our best guesses based off of the science that we know.
Professor Rajat Mittal has developed a formula to help predict the risk of transmission of COVID-19 through airborne transmission. But Professor Mittal isn't turning his formula into an app. Apps can tell you your risk of doing something like going to the store or meeting with friends, but are not a guarantee against contracting the virus, he says.
The power of it is not necessarily to be able to give you an absolute estimate of risk, but more a relative estimate of risk.
As the world struggles with the pandemic, people are turning to apps to decide about their day-to-day risks. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
Thank you for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy the day ahead.